Portions of this program may be pre-recorded.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Welcome back, folks. We are not recorded today. Today, well, my goodness, if somebody listens to this in the future, they're going to hear we're not recorded. Okay, this is live today. What is today's date? 14th? 15th? Today's July 15th. We're live today. I'm Greg Youngblood, and I'm here with the Black Robe Patriot, Dr. Gene Youngblood. Feel free to call in at 904-831-0917. There is so much taking place in this world today. On the one side, it's horrific. I mean, I can imagine people running and hiding, and I can also relate to the excitement, because as a believer, I'm seeing the things kind of stirring, you know, spinning out of control, and I go, the Lord's return is soon.
Yes.
The Lord's return is soon.
Even so, come quickly.
Yes. So there's the excitement, and of course, I get to go back home to the southern tip of heaven, so the chaos. The chaos is
on. You're gonna leave us in the chaos.
That's right. The chaos zone, and when everything gets really crazy, you just have to come up and visit me in Egypt. I mean, the southern tip of heaven. But in the midst of the chaos, what advice? What good words do you have for us in the midst of the chaos? Where's the hope? In the midst of the chaos, what's next? There's a commentator for years. He ran videos, and each one he ended with the words, "What's next? What's next? What's next?" So what's next?
Well, Greg, I'm delighted that we do have hope, and our hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and his righteousness. I'm looking at the July-August issue of Decision Magazine, Billy Graham Organization, and when I looked at the lead line, the pictures, the headline on the cover, I was concerned about what it seemed to indicate. But the article itself, titled, and it's dealing with part of what is the chaos today and confusion, and that's Black Lives Matter. And the article says, the stated goals of Black Lives Matter are anti-Christian.
They are anti-Christian. When you have a founder that is a out-of-the-closet radical lesbian that's also a radical Marxist, and the Marxist ideology that spews from her mouth and others within the organization, how can it be identified as anything other than a radical Marxist movement and Democrat fundraising arm? And the fellow that's he is the white man that professes to be black. I think he got the scholarship from Oprah Winfrey because he said he was black. And he is a major Black Lives Sean White. What's his name? Sean. What's his name? I forget his name. Well, you know what? It's just as well that I don't remember his name.
He heads BLM out of New York.
But he is now. And this has been said for a while. At a certain point, they will target the believer. They will not tacitly, not hypothetically, not partly, but directly. And what has he done? He has called out for churches to have statues torn down and windows removed because of the white Jesus.
And they're doing that.
And they're doing that. They crashed into the church the other day and set it ablaze, like a 200-year-old
church. Right down in Marion County, here in the state of Florida. Here's the article, and then I'll read just this blurb. Then we'll take our caller, Greg. And it says here, do the core values of Black Lives Matter square with the biblical, clearly prescribed ways of holiness and morality? The short answer is no. Further, the article says, but without being aligned with entities or movements that are antithetical to the gospel we preach and the Lord Jesus Christ that we follow, we are called to speak for justice, but our message is distinct, our methods are peaceful, and the gospel and is gospel driven. Because Christ first loved us, we're able to love others. Because of its the thoughtfully crafted agenda, values, and missions, BLM is unmistakably incompatible with any biblical Christianity, and the many reasons Christians have to reject this movement can easily be found at the blacklivesmatter.com. According to its own history, BLM was founded by three black women, two of whom are self-proclaimed queers. And while these women may care about injustice and racism, they also care about normalizing sexual deviancy, deconstructing the biblical definition of the family, emasculating strong black men who identify as straight. And then this article gives the three major tenets of Black Lives Matter. They seek to dismantle the biblical family. Number two, Black Lives Matter champions the celebration of sodomy. Third, Black Lives Matter touts gender confusion as normal and seeks to make heroes out of those who are mentally confused about their sexuality.
Okay, we have a caller. Let's go ahead with your comments or questions.
Yes, Dr. Youngblood, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to ask you a couple questions. One is, do you think after the election, if Trump is reelected, how much of this craziness will go away?
And hold on a second. That's a tall order, because I think between now and November 3rd, they're going to do their best to burn this country to the ground. And sadly, we don't have a Democrat candidate that's willing to stand up and call this terrorism. It's domestic terrorism. We don't have a Democrat candidate that's willing to step up and castigate those that are now, you know, Trump, when he talked about a rally, and he said there are good people on both sides. He didn't say that racism was good, but there are good people on both sides. They hammered him. They absolutely devastated him in the media.
Yes.
But you have Joe Biden that's not willing to call out the evils of the terrorism, the looting, the burning, the radical demands of these leftists, these anarchists, these Antifa types and BLM types. Where is the media, or why are they completely silent in the midst of Biden's side? Well, did they ever ask him a question on this? He just had a press conference today. Did anybody have the nerve to step and say, hold on a second, before you leave the stage, Biden, tell us what you think of the craziness in Chicago, the craziness in Baltimore, the craziness in Atlanta, the craziness in Seattle, the craziness in L.A.? No, he hasn't gotten that question. Every single time Donald Trump turns around, they give him the sidewinder question. You know what I mean? No sidewinders for Joe Biden. Is it because maybe some of those mental acuity tests that he says he's taking all the time? By the way, I want him to show the results of some of those mental acuity tests that he says he's taking all the time.
What is acuity certificate?
I want to see that one. Go ahead. What's your second question?
Biden's got is Biden can pass. He has a pulse, and his temperature, say, is 98.6, but other than that, he's just not there. He's just a warm body for all these radical groups. And Black Lives Matter, that BLM, that's burn, loot, and murder. But
you know what?
That's what I'm saying.
Right,
it's insane what's going on. It's insane. So how much, if by some miracle Biden would get it, don't you think all this craziness really would go away, or 90% of it?
Not a chance. We watched the Democratic primary. We watched as they had two dozen on the stage. And what happened? Now it's typical. Your Republicans and your Democrats, during a campaign season, they all become rock rib Republicans. They all become dyed-in-the-wool conservatives. 95% of them are absolutely classy Christians. You know, almost what was his name? John McCain. Oh, my goodness. Now, I hate to speak ill of the dead, but every 6 years he claimed to be an absolute dyed-in-the-wool conservative, yet it was his vote that kept us from replacing Obamacare cleanly. It was his vote that shut the debate down. You know, he came out and he did his big thumbs up, and he's pulling the Nero thing, you know, comes out and he turns that thumb down, and he decided the case against that legislative package. But at election time, he was always a conservative. And now, see, the Democrats do the same thing. During their campaign, they're radical leftists because they know their base is radical leftists. But historically, once they're elected, they moderate, as they say. Once the primary is over with, they moderate. Where's the moderation on the part of Joe Biden? Today, he was locked arms with Bernie Sanders again, the most radical member of the Socialist Democrat Party. He's locked arms with AOC. They're the ones that are running the party today. There's no moderation with Joe Biden today. And he is, quite frankly, quite frankly, as he hides out in that basement today, he is scared to death to moderate, if he's even thinking about it. He's scared to death to moderate because it would inflame. By the way, the flames that are burning, they will come. Those flames will come for these individuals that consider themselves moderate Democrats. That mayor of, what was it, Seattle? She thought she was insulated, and all of a sudden they came to her house. Was that the one? Seattle, Washington. She thought she was insulated. She was on the side of all these radicals, and they came to her house, and all of a sudden she goes, ooh, ooh, ooh.
Now, then she said, these are terrorists.
These are terrorists, yeah. Well, hold on a second. They were terrorists when they were burning down everybody else's houses. They were terrorists when they were destroying businesses and looting businesses. Why have you just decided, you just come to the conclusion they're terrorists? People, when the revolution took place in Cuba, many of them thought, we can deal with Fidel Castro. I posted a picture the other day of an individual in the midst of that revolution that was taken to his knees, and he was given a four-minute trial by Che Guevara. He was a farmer, and he refused to give up his land. You had a lot of people saying, you know, we can work with Fidel Castro. But this man, he refused to give up his farm. And after a four-minute trial, Che Guevara had him killed, had him executed, had him put to death. I have news for you, every one of you folks that think you can negotiate with the radicals, that you can negotiate with the Antifa crowd, that you can negotiate with the Marxist within the BLM movement, that you can negotiate with the looters, the robbers, the mayhem creators, they will come for you. They will come for you. They have no respect for anybody or anything. If they're willing to tear down a Frederick Douglass statue, whose statue do you think they won't tear down? Here he was, a former slave, an abolitionist himself, an articulate spokesman for many things. Good. And they tore down his statue. Tell me, where will they stop? Whose statue will they not tear down? Whose house will they not loot and burn?
Are you talking about Douglass, the abolitionist, the one that he was a freed slave?
Yes, he was.
Lincoln.
They tore his statue down. They tore his statue down. That's why I'm saying. Do you think if you consider yourself a moderate within the Democratic Party, you think they're not coming for you? They're coming for you. When those that are committing the chaos today, when they see that they are perceived that they have power, then anyone that does not agree with them 100% is a target. And quite frankly, even if you agree with them 100%, you may become a target, because a lot of them, they're just in for what they can loot, what they can steal. And the George Floyd thing was an excuse. Once again, I'm going to say one more time, George Floyd should not have died. There was a personal conflict between a police officer that was historical. You had a bad cop. You had a bad human being that committed a murder in my eyes, and he's on trial for that. I won't make the final conclusion. It sure didn't look like that to me. He's going to be put on trial. That is not an excuse. That is not a reason for the chaos that we see in the streets today. You had how many dozens shot and killed over the weekend in Chicago? The killing takes place every single day. But that killing falls in the vein of the, you know, folks like Margaret Sanger. It's an okay kind of killing but somehow or another, when it's a white police officer, that's a horrible, you're going to use that as an isolated case. Out of 10 cases last year, I believe two of them were really questionable, were unarmed black people. It's a false narrative that's being pitched out there. And the real chaos, the real calamity, the real horror, the real genocide that's taking place is not being addressed. It's not being addressed by Biden. It's not being addressed by anybody on the left. They want the chaos in the streets. They require division. You know, e pluribus unum, out of many, one. Well, they would like to make one into many. They would like to divide as much as they possibly can. Democrats were at the roots of the slave movement, the slave trade, the KKK and Jim Crow laws. What in the world do you think is different today? Today, by the way, and we're going to chase this rabbit for just a second, because I've handed out Bibles for many, many years, and I've handed out pocket constitutions with the Declaration of Independence built in with it. You can get those from me or from the National Center for Constitutional Studies, because I've given out so many tens of thousands of them, they cut me a pretty good deal. But as I give those out, I share with folks, this is, you know, I share with you a Bible, I share with you a Constitution, because these are things that every believer should know, every citizen should know. At a meeting, and I won't say what kind, but you know, we have meetings of Mennonite Club and Rotary and different professional service organizations, and I'm at one of these kind of meetings, And I decided, you know what, I'm going to hand out a box of these. And I put a little stamp in the front, you know, this is given you by the Youngblood family, not me particularly, but the Youngblood family. And it has a Daniel Webster quote. That Daniel Webster quote is, God grants liberty only to those who love it and are always ready to guard and defend it. I think it's a great quote. He's tagged as the defender of the Constitution. But as I hand these out, a young lady, she happened to be a black young lady, in a military uniform, I reached out and I was going to hand her that. And as soon as she saw it was what it was, she pulled her hand back. She goes, that doesn't work for me. That doesn't work for me. And I kind of wonder, literally I was puzzled. I was a little offended, a little bothered. I'm just trying to offer something for free that I think has great value. And I pondered that. And then I heard other folks, as I listened to many on the left, and they see the Constitution as a pro-slave document, and that touches them. Frederick Douglass, we were just discussing a moment ago, Frederick Douglass explained like the three-fifths compromise for the positive anti-slave provision that it was. You know, if you Google that today, three-fifths compromise, and you start reading, you're going to run up on people that actually articulate that point. It was a pro-slave. Well, they're putting together a union, again, e pluribus unum. They're putting together these 13 colonies, and some had slaves and some did not. I mean, you had a Georgia colony that voted to do away with slavery, and from like 1735 to 1760, 1770, they didn't have slaves. But slaves were abounding. They were all over the planet at the time, and the fact that those British colonies were engaged, well, that's part of what Britain was doing. That's part of what was going on. And about 5% of those black African slaves ended up in the colonies that then became the United States of America. But then you fast forward, Frederick Douglass, I believe he said that for 20 years he prayed for freedom, and finally he decided to pray with his feet. You know, and I don't know the whole story of Frederick Douglass. Wonderful man, though. A lot of great quotes, a lot of great wisdom bound up in that man, and he put out on paper and in speeches. But he explained that three-fifths compromise for the anti-slave provision that it was. Keep in mind, if you're uniting states that are free states and slave states, those that were holding slaves and those that weren't, and you had those states that wanted to count their slaves for the purposes of, get this, representation in Congress. So you have so many people residing in your state, you get another representative. Think of what would have transpired if we did one for one. We're going to treat every slave as a counted human being for that state for the purposes of representation. Well, they knew at that time what that would mean. Would they would import as many slaves as they needed to import in order to dominate, to have the most representatives, and it would be a perpetual slavery because they could vote themselves power in Congress by virtue of the fact that they had more slaves. Now, keep in mind, those slaves couldn't vote, not till the 15th Amendment. So, and when it was really perverse. So they negotiated this compromise. You had folks that were non-slave states that said, hey, you're calling this property, these folks, these slaves, you're saying they're property. So if your property can vote, we want our chickens and our cows to vote. I mean, think of how absurd that is. So they argued it back until they compromised on three-fifths. If they had, again, gone one for one, it would have meant they could have kept slavery going. But they didn't, and Frederick Douglass understood this, and he articulated this point. It's an anti-slave provision, and the other anti-slave provision was 1806 termination. They couldn't prohibit the importation of slaves until 1806. 1807 rolls around. Thomas Jefferson signs legislation that literally ends it. Boom. So guess what? The United States did not start slavery, but the United States did end slavery. Thank God.
Yes.
We have more to be thankful for in this country than any other place on the face of the planet. This is the greatest nation on God's green earth, and the moment you forget that is the moment we begin our decline. The moment we have two generations of young people from K-5 through PhD level being taught that this is an evil country. Why in the world are we – our AP textbooks, you know, I had somebody talking about that the other day. AP textbooks in history, you have tons of them that start at Reformation. They start at this dark portion of our history. They start at, they don't start from the beginning. You know, they don't have deep, in-depth analysis of the words of folks like Frederick Douglass on the three-fifths compromise. They don't have in-depth discussions on the Federalist Papers. They don't have in-depth discussions on the history of the United States, the Puritans, the Pilgrims that came over seeking freedom to worship. They don't want to have the dictates come from the government as to who they should worship or how they should worship. That's what they think thank God for in the midst of the freedom that they found here. No, you start in those darkest days. I mean, literally, what if all history was bound up in the study of the riots of 2020? All history started with the riots of the 60s. What if we rehashed the Vietnam War every single day? Now, by the way, for a while I said my Uncle Ken served as a colonel in Vietnam, and we had some discussions before his passing a few years ago. Quite an honorable man. Until late in life, he really didn't want to have those discussions. But he said, you know, we were winning that war. We were pushing back the Viet Cong. We were taking land step by step by step, and we were going to prevent the spread of communism. The thing is, we can argue, should we have been there? But let me argue this other side for just a second. Not the should we or should we not have been there. Should communism spread? That's what I'm arguing. Should communism spread? Right now, I believe the leftist professors of today started out in the 60s as being anti-Vietnam. I'm not saying everybody's anti-Vietnam War was a leftist deep down in their heart. But I'm telling you, a lot of those that were against the Vietnam War that went on to become professors, they hate America.
Yes.
They hate capitalism. They hate Christianity. They embraced communism. And the fact that communism was spreading from north to south Vietnam, that didn't bother them one whit. It bothers me a lot today that communism is still strong in places like China, that they're decimating Hong Kong, that freedoms are being extinguished, that Christians are in jail. That bothers me. If it doesn't bother you, there's a problem.
Well, Todd, we should never have allowed in America the Communist Party USA.
That's right.
Right here. In fact, it's been over 10 years ago now. I said that we have then over 100 in the House and the Senate that are affiliated with, are proud members of the Communist Party USA.
It invaded our college campuses. And under the banner of academic freedom, we allow it to expand. Now, keep in mind, under academic freedom, they would have Ahmadinejad, or I'm a nut job, whatever. You know, the fellow was the president of Iran that wanted to bathe the world in blood. He was looking for the 13th Imam. You know, this dude is nuts. They allow him on a college campus. And you know what? I'm okay with that under academic freedom. But don't you dare allow I'm a nut job to go and stand and speak on a college campus and then not allow Ann Coulter. I mean, she's kind of out there sometimes. But you're going to say she can't speak? Are you going to say, you know, Ben Shapiro? You're going to say he can't speak? Are you going to burn things and smash windows on a college campus when a conservative comes to speak? No, that's not academic freedom. That's not academic freedom. So it's amazing to me, and we've seen this over and over and over. We see this within radical Islamists a lot. They will play the weak person. They will play the just give us an ear, just let us speak, just give us freedom until they're in power. Now, these leftists, when they're in power, what do? They shut down all opposition. I challenge you to show me differently. College campuses across the United States, opposing voices are shut down. Even tenured teachers that open their mouth and say something that doesn't fit lockstep with the leftist agenda, all of a sudden they find that they don't have classes this semester. All of a sudden they're like on lunchroom duty, but they don't have kids to teach because the leftist, all the way back to John Dewey in the early 20th century, the leftists want to completely dominate academia. Today, reports are, and you have two different age groups, each one of them falls under the 34 category, that half of them, it's like 56% of those that are the youth category, 56% of them are okay with socialism. They think it's a good idea. By the way, once again, phone number to call in is 904-831-0917.
Greg, let's take a moment with what we're talking about, with the chaos, the confusion, the hysteria, the fright, the things that's taking place in America today. Coming out of Nancy Pelosi, AOC, Chuck Schumer, and the BLM. In fact, I've called it the Socialist Marxist BLM Communist Democratic Party. That's what it is. But here's what I am concerned about. We will reach a point, what I call the tipping point. The tipping point. In your opinion, Greg, for the benefit of our listeners, And perhaps someone would like to give your insight on this question. What is the tipping point in America? What will be the thing that will tip the scales that will bring about full Marxist socialism in America? Where are we headed with that? And let me give you an illustration. There's a program that comes on television I don't get to watch a whole lot unless it's news. I like to watch news. Excuse me.
Yeah, but, between news and talk radio, it's and I will as I'm commuting back into that 540-mile run from the southern tip of heaven in East Tennessee, I find myself listening to talk radio a lot. And when I can't get the talk radio, then I want to find some good Christian music. And kind of third place, sorry folks, third place it probably ended up on some kind of country music. But it's tough for me to go an entire day and not consume a lot of news. I need to know what's going on in the culture around me.
Greg, here's an illustration. This program comes on television, What Causes Planes to Crash?
Yes.
I've watched dozens of those. Now, here's one illustration. I'll do it quickly for the benefit of our time. On one of the planes that crashed, it was an anomaly. There was no rational reason. So they went back to the manufacturer's requirements. They showed the layout, the design of the plane, the dimensions of the plane, where the cargo bay is located, what luggage could be carried, what kind of weight could be carried for the total maximum weight. The long and short of about a 18-month study, research to determine what had happened. The plane had reached its tipping point. The plane would only take so much cargo, and the pilot was known to max out the cargo. On this particular case, he did not calculate in the extra weight of the plane because of ice freeze on the wings. That, along with the ice freeze on the wings, caused the plane to start shuddering. That shuddering, that movement, caused the buckles on the cargo
to
come loose. The load shifted, and it was called the tipping point. At that tipping point, the plane flipped, drove straight into the ground, killed everyone on board. That's something that day in America, that tipping point.
Our moorings have to be solid. Solid in the word, and solid in our Constitution. Every radical leftist system goes after your God and comes after your gun. Our First and Second Amendment articulate the rationale behind your God and your guns, and neither of those can be assaulted without absolute events
yes.
taking place.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.